Hi, everyone, and welcome to the new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm your host, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Susie David Kenyon. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, and you're listening to the bi-weekly retail show that will cover all things retail and how it collides with every part of our lives. I should also mention that our bi-weekly show will alternate with either Andrew Lipsman or I hosting. This will give us a chance to talk to some of the most interesting voices in retail and cover different parts of the retail ecosystem. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by our grocery and quick commerce resident expert, senior analyst Blake Droche. You all know him from his fun facts for Dinner Party Data and winning way more often than I do during the weekly listens game. Hey, Blake.
Hey, Susie. It's great to be here. I'm so happy to be on the retail-centric podcast because normally over on the weekly listen, I'm always just bombarded with questions from Marcus about things that I'm not necessarily an expert on. So this is a chance for us to really, you know, talk about what we are truly passionate about, which is retail.
Well, I'm so excited to have you, Blake, and I'm also thrilled that there's no game of the week on Reimagining Retail, so we don't have to worry about a made-up point system.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought we did have a contest. Maybe I'll just end the podcast here then. I'm only in it for the contest.
Sadly, me too, but I couldn't figure out how to make myself win if I was the host, so that's why there's no game.
Fair enough.
So in today's first half of the show, we'll be talking shop about a very hot pandemic topic, digital grocery shopping. What changed? What's staying the same? And what does that mean for retailers and CPG companies? And in the second half, Blake and I have some pop-up rankings where we'll discuss what three features from the newly published grocery benchmark study popped for us. Of course, everyone highly values free shipping. But what were some of the other features that we thought would either pop higher or didn't actually make the rankings as high as we had expected? So before we get started, Blake, as you probably heard in the last episode, we're going to start all my episodes with ratings and reviews, where we'll discuss a good or maybe a bad consumer experience we recently had, what made it memorable, or what could the retailer have done differently to turn the experience around. So I'll start while you think about your experience. I, like everybody else, got those eye health virus, what are they called? The like antigen
the
virus
tests.
Testing. Yeah, the COVID tests to make sure that I was COVID-free. And I bought them overpriced at the local pharmacy, and I was very annoyed about that because I opened two kits and the liquid was not in either of them. And then I was like, for $40, that's not cool, but I knew the pharmacy was not going to be helpful because it was past the two-week return period. So I actually emailed the iHealth people, and guess what? They sent me a new box within 2 days, and I was thrilled. And what that makes me think about is how now some of the CPG companies and brands are going to go direct to the consumer to make sure that that's a good experience for them and sort of knock out the retailer. The middleman is going directly to the consumer to ensure a good experience. And I have been talking about this nonstop for the last 2 weeks because I was so pleased.
And that's great customer service, right? Because they identify that the fact that, you know, they sent out a flawed product and even in what was, you know, probably the hottest item over the holiday season, like it or not, were these COVID tests. And the fact that they were able to reimburse you within 2 days at a time where tests are still very much in demand, it shows that they acknowledge the fact that they made this error and they were willing to own up to it and fix that without, you know, hurting your perception of the brand, given a product that you want to make sure that the consumer has a very high degree of confidence in.
Yeah, couldn't have had a better experience. What about you? Did you have anything happen in the last couple of weeks that you want to talk about?
So yeah, this is the time of year, and I hope nobody in my family listens to this podcast because I'm a big returner of holiday gifts. I return essentially every item of clothing that I'm gifted from people in my family, which means that in the weeks after the holidays, I'm generally running around to a lot of retailers in New York in order to exchange the clothes that I don't want for clothes that I do want. And
Blake, nobody's ever going to buy you a gift again.
Well, no, I'm just hoping that nobody in my family listens to this or else my cover is going to be completely blown because it factors into the story that I do this in secrecy because I don't want anybody to know that I'm a serial returner of gifts. So I can't ask for the receipt. So this makes returns a little bit more complicated. There are plenty of places where I go around to that ask for the receipt. And if I don't have the receipt, then they will just not accept the return at all. And I won't name the retailers that operated on this policy, but I encountered several of them this year. But I did go to Bloomingdale's to return a couple of sweaters that I did get from some family members who will not be named specifically. And Bloomingdale's, the flagship location, they accepted my return and gave me full credit without any hesitation. It was very fluid. I ended up finding clothing items that I was interested in purchasing that day, and it was really seamless. So I think if you are a retailer and you're interested in satisfying this very, very important subset of consumers, serial returners such as myself, you have to forego that gift receipt because sometimes it's just too awkward to ask for it, especially if you're going to be asking for it year after year like I am.
That's true. But then maybe if you asked for it year after year, they would just give you a gift card. And you would make their life easier too.
This is the problem. I just don't want to offend anyone, but
I see. The good news about Bloomingdale's and Macy's is that they have those little return stickers on the clothes. So you really don't actually need a receipt because they make it so easy for you.
They do.
Which is a good thing. Every retailer should be doing that. You're right. I love that example. So now let's get to our first segment, Talking Shop. So we want to talk about grocery. We know everybody's talking about groceries. Everyone's talking about inflation, the supply chain woes, the price of goods that are increasing, and how that's impacting consumer spending. And in fact, actually, Civic Science just launched a study that said 38% of respondents are buying less meat, poultry, and fish because of the price increases. I know we talk a lot about this, so I thought maybe instead of talking about that stuff that everybody is talking about, we could talk about some of the other things that are happening around the grocery space that are unintended consequences through the pandemic. So before we do look at some numbers, do you shop online for groceries, Blake?
I don't shop online for groceries, actually. And the reason why I don't is because my grocery store of choice charges a fee for delivery. And that is very relevant to the findings of the benchmark, which show that consumers value the cost effectiveness on shipping. And that's sort of a deal breaker for, I think, a lot of customers, is because we want the convenience of fast shipping, but we aren't necessarily willing to pay extra for it.
So you never buy anything, even pantry items, online?
No, I will buy pantry items online. I'll buy dry goods. I will buy from, for example, just a general retailers that will sell what we would consider like grocery items. But no, I don't generally do same day delivery, but I will get grocery items shipped.
Wow. Well, I mean, you're certainly an outlier because according to our benchmark, 94% of the respondents shop either online and in store for their groceries. So that's pretty high. I'd say I do both. Although now that I feel safe, I definitely go into the store. I mean, I'm very lucky, even though it's New York and nobody thinks that we have grocery stores, I have three within a 5-minute walking distance. So I definitely go and buy things day of, but I also deliver a bunch of stuff, especially the heavy stuff.
Yeah, I think that's that would seem to be, and again, we live in this bubble of Manhattan that elicits a very different type of grocery buying behavior than someone who maybe lives a 10-15 minute drive from the store, primarily drives their car to the store and can shop in a totally different way. But yeah, I think that is sort of the way that a lot of people are shopping across the board, is that no matter where you live, it tends to be a mix of both. And the buying habits vary depending on what people buy in store and what they decide to buy online.
And I think, I mean, you're an outlier, so you're not part of these numbers, but 44% of folks who responded to the benchmark study already were shopping online pre-pandemic, and 48% of them started in 2020. So that gets us very close to that 90-something percent that are shopping both online and in store. And what I thought was really interesting is that around 45% shop one or three times online. So that means that they are really doing both. They're going to the store and they're also shopping online. Because I think probably especially families shop for groceries at least once or twice a week, if not more.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, like I said, it's probably those routine bulk orders, especially if you do have a family and you sort of know that we, you know, go through X rolls of paper towel, X, you know, boxes of cereal per week, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, cover for the fact that someone decides to make a new recipe for dinner that week and they have to run out to the store to get an ingredient. And I think that's typically the way that a lot of shoppers are going about sort of that omni-channel buying habit.
It's true. Although we should probably talk about that next, after in the next part of the segments around the quick commerce, right? Because when I tried to make lasagna this weekend, I unfortunately didn't realize that you can buy rotten onions that feel hard. So when I went to cut it, I was like, oh my God, I can't use this onion. And then I went to a different grocery store to pick up an onion, but I probably should have done the quick commerce. I didn't even think about it. Before we get there, I did want to say that while we are talking a lot about pandemic behaviors, what will stick, what won't stick, from the benchmark, we realized, or 50% of our respondents said that they don't actually expect to change their behavior. And so that's what we're going to dive into next. What are some of those behaviors outside of just shopping online more are people doing through the pandemic that will probably stick? So before we do that, you know, eMarketer is very well known for its forecasts. We have a digital grocery forecast. It's expected to reach $148 billion this year. So I'm going to say that again because it's such a gigantic number. Digital grocery sales are going to reach $148 billion in 2022. They're going to pass the $200 billion mark in another 2 years. And to put that in perspective, in 2019, well before the pandemic, that was only $67 billion. So definitely people are going to continue shopping online. So with that, we know that it's growing. We do know that there were some shifts in mindset. One of the ones I hear a lot about that I unfortunately participated in a ton and might still be doing is hoarding. People are buying multiples of things and saving them just in case you can't find it in the store. And I would say now I'm even starting to get some emails from CPG companies saying the price of X is going to increase next month. So buy whatever you need right now, which I think is kind of a fascinating strategy. Are there any other types of behaviors you think that really shifted that are going to stick?
Well, yeah, I think that people certainly were eating at home more often during the pandemic. And I think that people are a little bit more savvy when it comes to, you know, cooking up their own meals than they were before the pandemic. And if you sort of get that knack for cooking, then even as restaurants open back up, you might be a little bit more inclined to stay in on a Friday or Saturday night and cook a new meal than you would before the pandemic, when you maybe only knew how to make some basic dishes and went out when you wanted to enjoy something new. But I think people are getting more adventurous in the kitchen, and we've, you know, a lot of the CPG food brands and the retailers that I have interviewed throughout the pandemic, they all talked about how they were leveraging a lot of different media content and digital experiences to revolve around shopping for specific recipes. And yeah, it's not something that is going to totally transform the way that people buy groceries, but I think there's an element to it that is certainly going to have people buy groceries a little bit more often, which will help sort of further along that digital grocery sales forecast. And another thing that is interesting, Susie, about the sales forecast is that we are going to see digital grocery sales continue to grow in the coming years. I think it's nearly going to double the figures that you spoke about. That's nearly doubling between 2021 and 2025. But we're not going to see new digital grocery buyers grow in line with the sales growth. So that means that people who are already digital buyers, as you said, it makes up, it's most people, but those people are going to start shopping more and more online, and the digital spend per buyer is going to increase. So that is just, that means that basically it's not only people opting to buy more groceries in general, but it's also going to, now that they've been introduced to this behavior of maybe cooking more at home and buying digital groceries could kind of be hand in hand in helping that sector grow.
Right. Well, I also think, I mean, you're right. A lot of people, except for me, tried new recipes during the pandemic. I just stuck to the five I knew.
But you made a lasagna.
I make a killer lasagna, but I've been making the killer lasagna for the last 20 years.
Okay,
so
there you
I don't,
go. It's seasoned lasagna
COVID
expert.
New. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I make the sauce by myself. So I feel like I do get credit for that. The noodles I don't, but the sauce I do. But what I was going to say was most people redid their homes too during the pandemic. So I think when Nielsen IQ ran a survey earlier this year, they saw that consumers are deprioritizing going out and even just traveling internationally because I think they like being home. So not only are they better cooks, but their house looks different. I know I have a family member who's putting in a pool. So I feel like people are really investing in their home. So of course they're going to stay home more often. And I even read something around people are working from home more than ever before. And so that too means different food occasions and snacking occasions that they didn't have before.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you think about people who made that full transition from working in the office every day to working from home, even most of the time. You think about just the fact that that's an extra meal at home, maybe even two meals. It's definitely lunch, but breakfast as well. I mean, that really adds up in terms of annual grocery spend when most people were spending that money 5 days a week outside of the home.
Totally. And so if you're a retailer or a CPG company trying to sell direct to consumers, you want to highlight some easy snacks and easy meals so that people come to you instead of because we can walk out of our apartments and go buy something to eat or order in. But how do you make it so easy and so efficient for the consumer so that they do eat at home instead of going out? The other thing I wanted to talk about in this realm of like what should grocery folks be doing in terms of trends is really around health and wellness. I mean, I know one of the features that you looked at was do people care about some of the health crazes like low sodium or good for your heart, and it didn't feature very high. Mm-hmm. But I do think that consumers are more focused on fresh products. I mean, Nielsen IQ again ran that same survey and they talked about how consumers are looking for things that are healthy, but also affordable and at low prices from brands that they trust. So I think that's another nugget for retailers to think about. How do you signal health and wellness in your products?
Right. And we found that in that specific question was, do respondents to our survey find it extremely important that you have the ability to sort by dietary need? And yes, it wasn't super high up on the list, but that's something that could be potentially very important for a smaller subset of people, even though it might not be in demand for every digital grocery shopper. But actually, when we looked at the crosstabs for that, urban millennials, or who are generally probably a little bit more health conscious, they found that to be much more important than the general population. And there are also, it's not just looking at a way to sort for dietary needs, it's people are looking for specific products that they're going to become loyal to brands that have certain organic or other dietary offerings to it. And they're also going to be looking to shop for at health food stores and specialty food stores in general. And we can, you know, talk more about how more niche services and products are using third-party delivery intermediaries and quick commerce to also make their products available digitally as well.
It's almost like you knew exactly where I wanted to go next. I feel like, you know, we talk a lot about the grocery component and people buying more things online, but that also comes hand in hand with fulfillment. And there are so many different buzzwords, quick commerce, quick delivery. These are some of the buzzwords that everyone's talking about. And also click and collect, which is like the umbrella term around curbside pickup, you know, buy it online, go pick it up inside the store. There is the idea around getting it delivered to your house, in-house when you're not there. We know Walmart is rolling that out. Have you tried any of these different options?
Yeah, I've used way back when GoPuff first started in Manhattan. I used it and it was pretty life-changing. I mean, not life-changing, but I don't want to go that far, but it was pretty stunning because it was actually my roommate at the time discovered it and we were like, where are these products coming from? Are they, it was just this app that we had heard about through word of mouth. And this was before I was involved in the industry or anybody had even really heard of the idea of quick commerce, because it was pre-Instacart, basically pre-everything, becoming like household names. And we didn't know if they were coming from a convenience store, if it was like, you know, sort of like a DoorDash or someone's going to pick it up from a convenience store, but or if it was coming from a warehouse. But yeah, they, you know, when they first started in Manhattan, and I think they did open up in Manhattan back in like 2016, 2017, and they maybe pulled away and then re-entered the market. But they were really sort of the first ones to introduce, from like my perspective as a consumer, like this idea of it's like 11 o'clock and you want ice cream, but you don't want to like walk to the, you know, nearest open convenience store. And you could literally get, you know, an item or two delivered without having to make a whole bulk order for a grocery delivery service.
Yeah, it's definitely convenient and very fast. And there are a lot of headlines swirling around this as well in terms of like, are they even profitable? Which we all know the answer to that. You know, is it safe? I mean, New York is thinking about, or maybe they already have started thinking about laws around 15-minute delivery, because I didn't even think about if you're pressed for time, you might not stop at the red light as a bicyclist and then you might hit someone, and that's really not a good thing. And so there are definitely a lot of consequences to these quick services in so many different ways. And you see that more and more retailers or grocery stores are trying to figure out how to get into that game. What I do think, you're right, though, you might have been a hero moment, because I used one of these services at a cookie making party. We'd run out of butter, and it was much faster to use the service than it was for us to go to the Whole Foods that was closest to their house and come back. And everybody was so excited and nobody had heard about it. And now I feel like I converted a ton of people. It is really that convenience component that is what makes it happen. So use cases for that, even though there's a lot of potential anxiety around, does that business model really work?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens once these companies need to start turning a profit. And as I've said before, we've seen a lot of them open up micro fulfillment centers in really high value real estate, commercial real estate areas in Manhattan. And I think that is enabling them to be super, super quick within that 15-minute window. But that could just be taking advantage of the sort of slump in commercial real estate that is still sort of lingering due to the pandemic. But once things really rebound, they're going to have to be a lot more economical, I think, in their choice of where they can place these micro fulfillment centers. And if they have to move further outside of residential areas because the commercial real estate is too expensive, then that's going to impact their fulfillment time. So it's going to be very interesting to see which companies are able to scale this model going forward.
Right. And I mean, for our listeners, we should specify, just in case it needs to be, that click and collect is very different from this micro fulfillment sort of warehousing, quick commerce, which is also very different from the last mile delivery, which has been a problem in terms of delivery, or sort of something that retailers struggle with for the longest time. How do you get to non-densely populated areas? This quick commerce, which is like typically the 15-minute delivery, is something that's really much more urban, city sort of, where there are a lot of options. I do want to say a couple of stats around the curbside pickup. I know there were a lot of folks who tried that for the first time during the pandemic, grocery or otherwise. It is definitely not new. Lots of companies were doing buy online, pickup in store. From our benchmark study that you launched and published in January, we know that about 60% of folks use traditional delivery, 50% have used curbside pickup. And what I find fascinating is that only 35%, so one in three, have done in-store pickup. And as a retailer, that's kind of the angle that you want, is how do you get them to come into your store to pick up their items so that potentially they buy other things. So it'll be interesting to see how curbside pickup and click and collect in general evolve. And we saw that Target announced that they're doing a test pilot with Starbucks, so you can get a Starbucks in your car. So I do think it'll be interesting to see how this fulfillment mechanism evolves. I mean, like, I feel like we can keep talking about this, but that's all the time we have for Talking Shop. So now, a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain, and then we'll get right back to our second segment.
Mountain is turning connected TV into performance TV. Their marketing software solution gives advertisers everything they need to quickly and easily launch connected TV campaigns that are fully optimized to achieve specific marketing goals. From conversions and revenue to website visits and more, Mountain Performance TV is tailor-made to treat television as a performance ad channel, just like paid search and social. Visit Mountain.com today to learn more and discover the impact it can have for your brand.
Okay, time for the second half of the show. And here we have some pop-up rankings. We're going to share with you features in the new inaugural grocery benchmark report that rated either higher or lower than what we expected. So let's get started. Sometimes there's a huge misalignment between what retailers think consumers want and what consumers actually want. It's often more sexy and cool to go after the shiny penny, but if you don't have the basics right, will it really work? Will you get the consumers coming to you? So I know, Blake, you talk about this a lot in terms of the bells and whistles and how that's not always the right way to go. And I feel like when we look at your benchmark, we really saw that pop.
Yeah. And, you know, if we could look at all of the data that's in this benchmark and come up with a summary, it's that the bread and butter is more important by so much than the bells and whistles. So what that means is that people spend a lot of their money on groceries. It's, you know, one of the biggest parts of everybody's expenditures every year. And they are willing to adopt the conveniences of grocery delivery, but they're really only going to be able to stick with it or want to stick with it if it's affordable. And they're not going to want to pay a ton of extra money to have their groceries delivered. They don't want to pay extra to have it same day versus next day. And they also don't want to give up the rewards points and the coupons and all the other ways that they look to save a few bucks on the way that they shop for groceries in store. Right. So really the convenience and the value, that's really the bread and butter here. And it's very competitive because a lot of retailers and services are offering very similar models in terms of order minimums and memberships to pay in order to access the free shipping. And then everything after that, the sort of the bells and whistles of the features of interactive shopping carts and user interface and reoccurring orders and things like that, that all really is nice to have, but it's not a need to have for a lot of digital grocery shoppers.
So, I mean, if we think about the first five, you sort of said it, I'm just going to re-say it. It's all really about value and speed. And so one in two features were around free shipping and delivery, whether you're a member or not of that service. And 47% of the respondents found that extremely valuable. Next up was coupons that are applied automatically. So again, it's like convenient, easy, frictionless, sort of make my life easier. Same day delivery and rewards and loyalty was at 36. There's kind of a 10-point gap between the number one and two and number five. So that kind of gives everybody else the lay of the land in terms of when you think about all 35 of the features that you looked at, there really is a gigantic gap between number one and the last one. So now thinking about the actual features, are there any that you were like, wow, I was really surprised? Like for me, auto replenishment was a surprise. It came in at number 27. And I would have thought that especially for CPG, like replenishment items, that would be a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you want that to happen? And usually auto replenishment comes with a saving. So I was really surprised that came in so far below. What about you?
Yeah, I think, once again, this has to do with the way that most people are. I think the way that most people are shopping digital versus online is very different. So I think there is a large subset of digital grocery shoppers who are maybe we're a little bit earlier and rely on digital grocery more. And these are the people that are going to use auto replenishment because it's like we talked about earlier, people who maybe have families and they go through the same amount of products on a reoccurring basis. And this is something that would be valuable to them.
Right.
There's another and perhaps maybe even larger subset of digital grocery shopper that maybe is still doing their weekly trips to the supermarket to pick up the bulk of their grocery orders, but then they're ordering online in instances where they're having a big party or they are going to stay in an Airbnb and they want to, you know, get a bunch of groceries delivered, you know, the day that they get there. And I think that subset is a little bit maybe larger at this point. It's they're probably going to get smaller as people adopt digital grocery as a more common occurrence. But the data here shows that sort of the auto replenishment and the features that enable the routine of digital grocery are maybe not as largely adopted as sort of the features that everybody is going to want, like free shipping and savings.
You're totally right. Because I also, one of the things I always do is go to my history and then just add the Bounty towels to the cart. And that, I mean, it was in the top 10, but it was only 1 in 4, 25-ish% that find that valuable. Meanwhile, I feel like that saves me so much time because I know what I want. I know which Tide smell I like. I know exactly what I want. And so I just do it. So I was really surprised that that came in with just 1 in 4 people who found that extremely valuable. I know we said we were only going to do a couple and time is running out, but I did want to throw in there that I was very surprised that curbside pickup is number 7, mm-hmm. but in-store pickup is number 23. And there is a pretty big spread in terms of how valuable people find those two different fulfillment options. And I think as a retailer, you really need to start thinking about how do you make curbside even more engaging so you don't miss out on those impulse sort of halo effect purchases that happen when someone comes into the store.
Yeah. First of all, I thought that was really interesting too. I thought that they'd be virtually even, but I could surmise that, look, curbside pickup has that added convenience factor of people not wanting to go in the store. I think maybe the idea is that once you're already in the store, then what's really the point of doing the pickup when you can just shop for yourself? I think this is also a learned behavior that happened during COVID, where people were trying to stay out of the store for health reasons. So they tried curbside before they tried in-store and were satisfied with curbside so they didn't need to try in-store pickup. And I also think, you know, like you said, Susie, it is really important for the retailers to get these customers in stores because that's where additional purchases happen. That's where, you know, you have the ability to advertise and market different products to these customers. And I think that's exactly why in the news this week, we saw that story with Target and Starbucks, because what a great way to A, add to the convenience of curbside, but also have a little marketing ploy there for Starbucks, which is a pretty big partner of Target's. I think they have most of their stores have Starbucks within the store. So it's a way of bringing that in-store experience into the curbside experience. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what else are retailers going to do. I know Walmart tried sampling for curbside pickup last year. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what else retailers are doing to try and innovate around something that has become a little bit more basic now. That's the end of today's show. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Thank you, Blake, for joining me on today's episode.
Thanks for having me. I hope to be back soon.
I hope so too. We'll be back in a few weeks on March 16th with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Don't forget to check out tomorrow's episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Mountain.